All right, hi everybody, and welcome to the test preparation class for the junior and senior high group in the ancient history program of History at Our House. I'm going to bring up the test prep sheets, and we'll do the standard thing of just letting you provide your answers, and we'll see how you did. I'll give you my feedback, and we'll compare notes on everything, and that should put you in a pretty good position to do the upcoming test. So, let me share my screen here, and we'll get off to the races. I fixed that little glitch in the test prep sheet, so there's extraneous number 4 now. Let's go ahead and do these, hopefully pretty quickly. And right, it says, give a brief description, and including the date if it occurred. And hopefully we're looking for something that is the most kind of potent way to remember the anchor fact in question. And I know that perhaps just in terms of how automatic and easy it is to remember some of these things, we haven't quite practiced this enough. And so I'm going to make sure that when we come back after the break that we have some facts practices for this, okay? But hopefully, since this is a test preparation exercise, you had plenty of time to stage your answers, including referring back to previous tests and stuff. So that should give your memory a jog. All right, so let's see. What's the best way to answer number 1? Get us started here. Sophie, go ahead.
You are here, 2016 AD.
Okay, which is the fact, but now I want to turn that into an integration of past and present. So how are we going to do that? What would be the way to do that in this course? Which is the reflection of this diagram here. The blue only happens because of the green, only happens because of the gray. So what would we say? We are here. Okay. How did we get here? What would be the way to say that? Juliet?
The world today is what it is because of its history, which goes back to ancient times.
Nice. There we go. That's the ultimate statement there, right? Yes, we are here, and that's the perfect starting place. And you'll have to say that every single time you go back to the past. You got to remind yourself, I am here, and I'm trying to learn something about the world I live in. I'm not trying to learn something about something that doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm trying to learn about the world that, as I see it around me, the one that I'm going to pursue my happiness in, what can I do to do a better job of that? Well, I want to understand how it works, how it got to be this way, where it's going, and that includes understanding its history. Okay, so as you put it, or I like to put it, let's see, we are here because of ancient history. That would be about as short a way as you could put it. I like Juliet's formulation as well, right? Because of history, which includes everything going back to ancient times. All right, so something along those lines. All right, now with the other ones, of course, we now are in the past, starting with number 2. So we have, the job is a little bit different. It's not, we're starting with that fact, and then we want to say what it means. Okay, number 2. Who's next? Not everybody at once. Timothy, please.
Okay. Rome falls in 476 AD, causing 1,000 years of dark ages, stopping all progress in history.
Okay. All right. Causing the dark ages. We have to be careful about, I mean, that statement, stopping all progress. That's a tricky one. I mean, is the Dark Ages a huge, humongous step back? Absolutely. But human beings were not stuck there. And so, in other words, that 1,000 years is what it took to claw our way back up from that huge setback. But there was a renaissance because, interestingly, you know, this is something to just kind of wrap your head around a little bit. The Renaissance comes after the Dark Ages, and they're not unrelated. there's stuff going on in the Dark Ages that led to the Renaissance also. It's not as if, like, there's the Athenian Golden Age, and then everything fails, all the lights go out, and then all of a sudden, there's a spark and you got the Renaissance. And you can just kind of skip over everything that happened. That's one of the things that some historians are really, really eager to explain. That there was a fair amount going on in those Dark Ages, and some of it did actually help produce the Renaissance. And so, careful of that statement. This is the whole there's no progress or whatever. I mean, it's more, how would I rather put it? I'd rather put it, Rumfel causing a Dark Age, and ancient values were not revived until the Renaissance. Something like that, right? Rome fell, bringing an end to the ancient world. Here we go. Now I'm getting it clearer. I'm doing this off the cuff here, but, you know, Rome fell, causing the end of the ancient world, which was only revived in the Renaissance after the Dark Ages, whose values were revived in the Renaissance, bringing about the modern world. Ooh, see, you got that's kind of overarching theme that we want to try to do here. We always want to try to make the connection between past and present. Okay? So Timothy, you want to try that one out for yourself? I know that it was I said a lot. What did you come up with after I said all that?
Well, I would just add to the end of my sentence, causing a thousand years of dark ages, stopping all progress in history until the Renaissance.
Okay. With the Renaissance of ancient values, which brought about the modern world.
Okay. Yeah.
That's kind of the bridge that I want to see there. The Renaissance of ancient Greco-Roman values. Okay. Number three. Sophie again.
The first Olympics take place, marking the start of Greek history in 776 BC.
Okay, definitely. All right, so first Olympics, and they mark the beginning of Greek history. Okay, so what can we do with that? Can we spice that up a bit? I think we make that a little bit more interesting. What do we do with that? This is the beginning. I like your point about how it's the beginning of Greek history. But that's kind of a... does that sound like fun to you? You know what I mean? Like, this is the beginning of Greek history. Well, I gotta be honest and say, well, for most people, when you hear that, the big follow-up is, well, so what? And I think it's pretty fair. Right? Because if we say it's the beginning of Greek history, then in a way we're still stranded in the past. We're still talking about stuff that happened to other people a long time ago. So what can we do with that? What did the Greeks do? Right? Why does Greek history matter? I would go with 776, first Olympic Games marking the beginning of Greek history. Or how about marking the history of the beginning of Greek culture, which brought us irreplaceable values like democracy. Something like that, right? There's our bridge again. From the fact to us. The Greeks are the ones that eventually are going to invent these things that are so important. Therefore, I mean, why else? You see, I mean, why else would we bother with this, right? Why else would this be an anchor fact? If it's just the beginning of Greek history, well, yawn, right? This is what most people feel, right? Because the fact doesn't just, it just doesn't have any meaning. Who cares if it's the beginning of Greek history? So we got to say, well, the Greeks are the ones that gave us democracy, history, philosophy, beautiful art, physical science. How about that? Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Greece. All right. So now we got a connection. Now, there's some people today that would still yawn if you tell them that, but too bad for them. All right. So you can't help everybody. All right, so let's go with number four, 500 to 449 BC. Somebody else. Juliet.
The Greco-Persian Wars fought. This war is perhaps the most important war ever fought, because if its outcome had been different, Europe would still be in its dark ages and America would not exist.
Okay, right, something like that. All right. So, we could, it'd be an interesting challenge. Who wants to try to put that one in a positive way? In other words, I have no problem with what you said, Juliet, right? Because it's perfectly fine to project the alternative. But what's the positive statement here, right? The Greeks won, dot, 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 right? Timothy?
Yeah, well, this is my original answer, but the Greco-Persian War is fought and Greece wins, saving the history of the world as we know it by being conquered from being conquered by an empire.
Okay, right. So saving the foundations of the Western world from conquest by an archaic empire. Right. So making it possible for Greece to create the foundations of Western life. Okay. Couldn't be more important. Okay, so, number five, 1922 AD, there's a whole other kind. Cliff, oh wait a minute, isn't that funny? So I still have more mistakes on here. Number five now is in the wrong place. So, you guys were supposed to tell me that I was really goofing off with these answers here. I got these numbers in the wrong place now. What did I do? Ugh, I didn't catch this. And nobody else caught it for me. Okay, Cliff, go ahead. What did you do with that? What could I possibly expect here?
I just answered the one that said 1922. So I put, in 1922, Howard Carter discovered Tutankhamun's tomb in the Valley of the Kings, allowing us a window into the time of Tutankhamun.
Okay. Into ancient Egyptian culture, or exciting new interest in ancient Egyptian culture, right? All right, I apologize for this error. This is really sloppy. I think that I went and corrected it and then made it worse. So 622 AD. Keep going with that, Cliff. Did you answer that one, number six?
I answered number five.
No, I understand, but I'm just keeping it going here.
Oh, I didn't get that one. I'm sorry.
Didn't get it. Okay. All right. 622 AD, the birth of Islam, right? Bringing an end to the archaic world of ancient Mesopotamia, Persia, and Egypt, right? And a whole new culture. That's why the purple ends and the brown begins. We'll do some more review of that in the coming weeks. I want this more solid here. This is actually supposed to be the easy part of the test. So, and then, this one at least, oh my gosh, number seven, circa 2500 BC. That one at least is in the right place, Sophie.
In 2500 BC, the pyramids at Giza were built, marking the time when Egypt was one of the most powerful civilizations in the world.
Mm-hmm, okay. Revealing to us today what the ancient Egyptians were like. Something like that. Okay, making that present day connection would be the best way to give us a meaningful description. Right? That shows us how the pharaohs ruled over their people. All right, like I said, we're gonna re-digest these anchor facts. I could tell that it's going to be worthwhile doing so that we can reconnect here. All right, anyway, let's go through the notes, the questions based on the notes. So, number eight, what does the word Renaissance mean? What was the original Naissance? How does this factor in an appreciation of the significance of the Greco-Persian War? All right, we had some discussion of that already. But all right, Timothy.
The word Renaissance Horus means rebirth. What was born in the first place was the ancient Greek and Roman ideas, consisting of art and music, to name a few. This is an appreciation to the Greco-Persian War, because had the Persians conquered Greece, the ideas of democracy would have been lost.
All right, not bad, except I think you gave a little bit of short shrift to the Golden Age. And so when you say, what were the two things that you said? Something in music? Art and music?
I said art and music.
Okay, right. So that's not enough. And to name a few is kind of, like I said, it's giving short shrift. Especially because then you go back and then at the end you summon the significance of democracy. Well, actually you should have said that as part of the list, right? Because it's kind of awkward to have you then bring it up in your statement of the meaning of the war when you didn't talk about it before. So it would be better to say the original Renaissance was the Golden Age in ancient Greece, in which such important values as art, music is not one of the top values the Greeks really produced. So I'm not sure where you got that one from, but I would definitely say in which art, philosophy, history, and the political concept of democracy were all originated. I mean, that's huge. I don't think you can yada yada those. You know, I don't think you can just say and a few others. And so definitely, I would say also that music has to kind of take a backseat there, because we know extremely little about ancient Greek music, and I don't see that there is, in fact, a good connection between kind of the greatest of the music that we know of in the modern world, which, you know, would consist of things like Beethoven. We don't see a connection between that and ancient Greece. It's not really part of the Renaissance. It's just something wonderfully new. Okay, so, the original Renaissance. Did everybody catch that one? I know it was a little bit of a hard term there. Maybe I was being a little bit too clever, right? But the original Renaissance means original birth. So Timothy got that, I'm pretty sure. And so that was the Athenian Golden Age. Okay, all right, let's move on from that. Well, number 9, what was the Ionian Revolt and how did it lead to the Greco-Persian War? All right, I need an editor. It used to be that there would be some people that would really help me with editing, because sometimes I'm rushed and I got so much to do. I'd love to get an editor to do this stuff for me. I think I know who to call on here to do some editing. All right. Anyway, how did it lead to the Greco-Persian War? We're only on number 9 here, guys. This is not good. Juliet?
The Ionian Revolt was an uprising led by the Ionian colonies. This revolt was helped by Athens. In the end, it was successful. The Greeks managed to sack Sardis, which was the capital of the Persian Empire. Satrapy. This led to the Greco-Persian War because the Persian Emperor Darius decided to conquer Greece to revenge his city.
Okay, perfect. Sorry about your voice, Juliet. I know it was tough for you now that you're sick, but thank you for toughing it out. All right, that's it. It was an uprising against Persian authority in Ionia, helped by Athens. They sacked Sardis, and that caused the Persian emperor to want revenge, leading to the Greco-Persian War. Okay. I do believe that was all accessible there. Okay. What happened at the Battle of Marathon, 490 BC? Why didn't Persia attack again for another 10 years, Sophie?
The Battle of Marathon had the Athenian fighting force greatly outnumbered. Despite this, the Athenians came out victorious due to their phalanx and fighting strategy. After this battle, a host of setbacks prevented the Persians from attacking again for so long. Egypt rebelled against them, Darius died, and a large chunk of their naval fleet was sunk by storms in a skirmish with the Greek navy.
Okay, so, you must be drawing upon some additional readings, because I think I know what battle you're referring to, but we didn't discuss that. But anyway, I liked your formulation. I like the way you put it, a host of setbacks. That's true, right? The rebellion in Egypt and the death of Darius. And then I think you're referring to some battles that are that I didn't highlight in the course. Anyway, that's all right. Okay, so that's the idea. I think it would have been nice to mention the double envelopment, just because that was the strategy. That was the way that they fought. But good answer. All right, so number 11. Why did the Greeks choose to fight the Spartans at Thermopylae specifically? What was the result? Juliet, good luck.
Actually, I had a question first. I couldn't find in the notes whether they fought the Spartans at Thermopylae. I could only...
See, this is what I'm talking about. I'm sorry. This is what I'm talking about with this, the editing. I apologize. Alright, I have to resolve to do an extra round of editing on the sheets. This is not good. I have too many mistakes on here. Like I said, I need to recruit an editor. This is more mistakes than I can tolerate here. So I apologize. This, of course, should say, why did the Greeks choose to fight the Persians at Thermopylae? Right? So, yeah, I'm sorry for that. Anyway, continue.
Okay, so the Greeks under King Leonidas of Sparta chose Thermopylae as the place to fight the Persians because of its tactical advantages. They fought the battle in an area with very restrained mobility, so that the size of the Persian forces would not matter. A man called Epilates, however, betrayed the Greeks. This led to the Persians winning the battle.
All right, thank you. Good answer. So I am just trying to immediately effect these corrections because it's just not good. So I'm quickly making these changes. So that, all right, there we go. Thank you, Juliet. That was a good answer. I'm going to scroll through this document instead. Okay, far-seeing Zeus grants to thrice-born Athena a wooden wall. Oh, divine Salamis, you will destroy the sons of women, said the oracle. How did the Greeks interpret this saying? Did it work? What happened? Sophie, please.
The Greek leader decided that this must mean that the army should retreat to the island of Salamis, and the wooden wall of their ships would protect them. Because of the scale of the waterways around the island, the Persian fleet couldn't give a full-on attack. The Greeks took out the most important ships first, and the battle turned in their favor. There was a risk that the Greeks could cut off the Persians' supply, so they retreated from Greece.
Nice. Okay, right on. Okay, let's continue. What policy did the Athenians advocate once the Persians had been expelled from Greece? When city-states allied to them began to disagree and refuse to follow that policy, what happened? Ominous times. So, the Athenians advocated the policy of continuing the fight, taking the fight to Persia, even though the Persians now were no longer a direct threat. Thus, they formed the Delian League with their allies. But when their allies began to disagree and refused to follow that policy, the Athenians refused to allow them to secede from the alliance. and militarily subjugated them, leading to the Delian League becoming the Athenian Empire. And you could take it further than that, and you could say, well, then these city-states rebelled against Athens as part of the Peloponnesian War, leading to the downfall of Greece. But that's an extra. Okay. Number 14, what does the word philosophy mean? What did Greek philosophers think was the purpose of philosophy? As an example, what did Socrates encourage people to do in order to be more philosophical? Juliet, please.
Philosophy means the love of wisdom. Greek philosophers thought the purpose of philosophy was to think carefully about important questions and then use logic to find answers, which can then be used to lead one's life. Socrates encouraged people to be honest with themselves in order to be more philosophical. Oh, my goodness.
It's a hard word. Philosophical. Philosophical.
There we go. That's what I was trying.
Yeah.
Know thyself was his first rule. He taught by asking questions in order for people to realize their ignorance.
Okay. All right. Nicely done. Right. So, that's good. So, let's just continue. The decline and fall of Greece. How, by what steps, stages, did the Peloponnesian War lead to the takeover of Greece by Alexander the Great? So this here is a storytelling question, right? I want you to take me through the sequence, right? How did it happen? Go ahead, Timothy.
Okay. The Peloponnesian War caused Greece to fall apart, which Alexander the Great took advantage of and conquered it. Sparta defeated Athens and forced the Athenians to have Spartan government. Sparta was then on top, but a new city-state called Thebes was gaining power. Sparta tried to conquer it, but their army was defeated. Thebes then captured a bunch of royal family members, including a prince named Philip from Macedonia. A general named Epaminondas taught Philip the art of warfare. Philip eventually went back to Macedonia and betrayed Thebes and all of Greece by sending an army with the skills Epaminondas taught him and conquered all of Greece. He died soon after, and his son Alexander took his place as ruler of Greece.
Okay, nice narrative. Basically, that's it, and you got all the right steps. I also like how you gave us kind of a topic sentence, which was nice. You laid out the basic theme in your first sentence, and that was nice, and then you gave us the details. So, well-structured paragraph. That was writing assignment worthy. and then the one part of it that was a little bit disjointed was Thebes defeated Sparta, and then they captured a bunch of royal characters. That didn't quite follow because, you know, Thebes defeated Sparta, and then proceeded to subjugate the rest of Greece. As part of that, they forced the Macedonians to give them royal hostages. Something like that. Right, we need a little bit more of a narrative bridge in there, because it felt like what you were talking about was hostages from Sparta, and it became clearer after. Pardon me, it became a little clearer as you went along, but it was confusing at first. Okay, but overall, nice paragraph. Okay, number 16. Alexander the Great temporarily became a Greek ruler of Egypt and Persia. You have two examples of how he behaved more like a Persian king than a Greek one. Juliet.
Two examples of how Alexander the Great behaved more like as a Persian king than a Greek one are that he became pharaoh of Egypt and how he required his courtiers to act. When he conquered Egypt, he restored temples, performed rites, and sought advice from an Egyptian oracle. When he was at court, he required people to bow down to him.
Okay, nicely done. Wow, yeah, that's it, exactly. Okay, and then a quick set of bonus questions. The two great historians of the Athenian Golden Age. Oh, nobody Timothy's hand is going up. What the? Timothy?
Herodotus and Thucydides.
Yes, not easy to say. Herodotus and Thucydides. Number 18. What famous runner ran all the way from Athens to Sparta to get help for the Battle of Marathon? Sophie?
Pheidippides.
What expression means finding a tricky solution to a difficult problem, Juliet?
Cutting the Gordian knot.
Cutting the Gordian knot. Okay. All right. Well, there you go. That's what you needed in order to get ready. Of course, you have the rest of the content of your notes as well. The few things that are going to be slanted in a different way on the upcoming test. So good luck with that. I'm going to post a nicely updated copy of this test prep for those listening to the recording. And so good luck with that. And let's see. The other thing is, of course, the schedule of activities to come. Notice that our next class, this is fun, is on a very rare day, February 29th. So check out the academic calendar. I will talk to you then. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.